This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek show number 670 with guest TJ Huddleston, recorded on February 5th, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. Here in today, a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska, 50 degrees, spring, it seems. It's not really. TJ, you were in the path of the storm last week. You're looking safe. Everything okay there in Ohio?
I mean, we're fine now. Oh, good. But I mean, that's like it was total chaos here. Yeah. we got about 11 inches of snow within 24 hours here in central Ohio. Do you guys have snow levels, like snow emergency levels over where you're at?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
If you live in a warmer part of the world, snow emergency levels are basically when you get too much snow and they need you to stay off the roads in order to clear them so that way people can go back on the roads. And for the first time in like 20 years, Franklin County, the place that I live in, went to a level 3 emergency, which means that you are not allowed to be on the road unless you are emergency personnel. Yeah. And so like they would literally arrest you if you were on the road. I don't know if they ever have arrested people, but that is what they say they can do, especially if you cause trouble out on the road. So we got a lot of snow. It's been very cold. It's been getting a little warmer. And by a little warmer, I mean like 16, 20 degrees. Yeah. So some of the snow is melting. You know, on the pavement and stuff like that.
You don't want it too fast. You don't want it to warm up too fast. That can cause other problems on the backside with flooding and some of those kinds of things. So, yeah, you want to make sure the weather stays a little chilly. Let it melt snow. We would a foot of snow here in Nebraska. We would have when we say a snow emergency, it just means you can't park on the street. Like they're don't park on these streets. We want to be able to clear them. I live on a major thoroughfare here in Bellevue and. We get a snow truck. If it's snowed in the evening, I hear the snow truck about 4 a.m. roll past my house one way, and then 10 minutes later, roll past it the other, and I know, okay, I'm ready to go clear snow. And so, that's the way it works here. Well, we're glad you're safe. I've saw pictures of all kinds, and it was kind of a double whammy, right? The storm came through a weekend ago. Then this last weekend, some folks got a ton of snow, and so there's kind of a double whammy for some folks. We hope you guys listening are all safe. And TJ, we're glad you're safe as well. Well, we'll post the show this week with some world-class show notes. Check it out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. If you're on the Patreon team, it's that time of the month. I just got your Patreon stuff came in here just today. Appreciate you and helping what we do here on the network. All that helps that the team that does that. You can join the Patreon team for 1 month or as many as you want. We just have one $5 plan. Super easy to get into. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then a big thanks if you're going to use the affiliate link at Amazon. We have a link for that as well on the website. So go to theaverageguy.tv. Just click through that link. It's the big red link. You can't miss it. Click through it. Easy to do. Benefits the network. Thanks for those who do that as well. I mentioned earlier, TJ's hanging out with me. TJ, welcome back. Hey, what's going on? HomeTech.fm. What are you guys doing over there?
Well, we're lining up to interview some people, but we all just got back from CES. So we released our CES episode. I think it was this last week where we did some interviews on the show floor. So we have that going on. Those are some pretty good interviews. Some companies I've never heard of. One of the companies I was talking to is a company called Fire Avert, and they make like a device to shut off either your gas or electric stove in the event of an emergency. So some neat stuff we saw like that. So hoping to get them on the show to discuss their products a little more, specifically them too, because it ties into our assisted living company that we have. So stuff like that would be really nice to have.
I'll throw that up on the screen. Is that the CES team? Did I get the right photo there?
That's me, Gavin, and Seth. Seth was there for a day. We actually, none of us believed it. He said that he was going to go, and then he said he wasn't going to go, and then he showed up. So he was there. He was a real person. Justin and Kyle from Apollo Automation. So they're down in Kentucky. They make smart home sensors, based off the ESP home platform.
Cool.
They were there. Awesome. We did a live show with them while they were there. So it was pretty fun.
What do you think? We're going to talk about CES towards the end here, but what do you think about this year's CES?
You know, I've never been to CES. I've never been to Vegas in general. And so I didn't know what to expect. For me, it was a good time just to catch up with a lot of people that I've never met in real life. You know, there was a lot of cool technology stuff, but I don't think there was anything revolutionary. You know, there's some new TVs, there were some new robot devices and all that good stuff, but nothing this year that was to write home about.
So you didn't walk away from CES with the kind of a like, whoa, that this is the thing that's going to be for 2026. So
you know, I think if I was going to say anything was going to be for 2026, it'd be robots in general. There was just everybody had a robot. People were coming out with robot lawnmowers, vacuums, you know, humanoid robots, all these robots. So
do you believe any of them? Like,
well, I think what sums it up is that the hardware is there, but the software isn't.
Okay.
Right. You know, that we can build this robot like human being, whatever, but it can't do what you want it to do. And I think that's going to be the hangup for these kind of devices.
We see the Boston Dynamics robots do some pretty amazing balance and walking and carrying, but do you think the more complex be around people is still a ways away, or do you think that can work? It's just maybe the real smart stuff is its way out.
Now, I think it's all a long distance away. Okay. I have to look at my robot devices that I have, and granted, my robot devices are substantially cheaper than some of these that we saw at the show. Yeah. But like my robot vacuum still gets confused by like rugs and stuff, you know. So like if it, like that's literally its job is to clean floors, and it gets confused by rugs. And I'm supposed to trust that this like $20,000 humanoid robot is going to be able to fold my laundry and do my dishes. I just have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's there hardware wise though. You know, you could see it, but
I think the cost, here's the deal. We want robots at the cost of a very cheap vacuum cleaner.
Oh yeah.
And you're just not going to get that, right? Those things are really expensive. I think we'll probably see them in service areas first, right? By big organizations that can afford $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 kind of thing, maybe even $1 million thing, right? You know, remember? Hey, you're younger than me, but remember the $6 million man? Remember when $6 million was a lot of money? Maybe that's not so much money anymore when we think about that. John in the chat, John Big says, "I guess we're not talking about crypto." TJ, do you follow crypto at all?
I don't. No, sorry, John.
Yeah, no crypto today. It's not doing well. Guys, we should have all expected this. So just write it down. It'll be fine. Anyways, TJ, we're going to talk. Let's kick it off with a little shed and solar. These are topics that's close to my heart. I'm going to bring up, some pictures, but you've had a busy fall and winter with some new hardware outside. I'm going to ask you a little bit about the tech. Last time you were on, we talked about some of the cameras and the lighting and some of the tech that you've done in your backyard. You've kind of turned the backyard into a garden. Talk a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, so this, we live in a relatively small house. I think it's about 1,000 or 1,100 square feet. We don't have a garage or a basement. And so we've wanted a shed since we bought the house. And we looked into sheds. We didn't really know where we were going to put it at. Sheds get very expensive. I don't know if anybody's bought a shed recently, but a shed can range from like $2,000 to $20,000, depending on what you actually want, like the size and everything. They get very expensive very quickly. And especially like the big name brands like Tough Sheds, you see those places everywhere. Those are like double the price of what I paid for this shed.
Yeah.
But we started looking into sheds, and we found a 10 by 16 shed. It's a lofted shed. So it's about 12 feet high, I believe. It's got a pretty decent loft space above it. We got it for $4,000 delivered. And
there's two in the picture. I'm assuming they were delivering another one to somebody else.
Yeah, this guy was crazy. I'd love to talk about the way the shed got delivered.
Yeah.
Because I was watching videos of this device. They have something called a shed mule. And a shed mule is the easiest way for me to describe it to you is basically a forklift for sheds. They basically, if you see the picture here that Jim is showing, they have two sheds on a trailer. And this trailer is probably 30, 40 feet long. And what he does is he raises the front of the trailer to lower the sheds to the ground. And then he takes them with that shed mule, and he puts wheels on one side, and he lifts it up on the other side with the shed mule, and he just drives it to the location it needs to go.
That's great.
It is amazing. You should watch a YouTube video on it, because it's like, it's incredible watching them just drive this around. They just do it like it's no, like nobody's business.
Half an hour or so to get it off the trailer and get it into, and get it into place.
Well, for us, I think it was like an hour for us. We had a very tight fit, as this next photo shows. We the easiest way to get the shed into the place we wanted it to was through our neighbor's driveway. And luckily, this neighbor we are cool with. So we took down a couple fence panels. My neighbor eventually had to move his dead car. So we had to like push the car out of the way in order to get the shed in, because he didn't have enough clearance. The whole thing was an ordeal because we just didn't like know how much space he actually needed. But that guy was a trooper. He just like, I asked him, I said, have you ever like got a shed off the trailer and you like can't get it into place? He goes, no, we have it off the trailer. We're getting it in somewhere. I was like, heck yeah, man. So he eventually got it into place. It took about an hour altogether.
Is this the final resting place? And then you had to find another way to get it back to
the... No. So if you go, I think in the next photo, maybe, yeah, there it is in place. So it's we had to pay somebody to put a gravel pad down. Yeah. Our backyard is very unlevel. Mm-hmm. So we had to like have a gravel pad put down. It's raised up quite a bit. It looks kind of awkward now because like it's so much higher than the fence, like on the side.
Yeah.
But it's technically level with the back of the yard. So
will you fill it in to kind of bring, you know, a walkway up to it, or
we're going to figure out something, you know, right in front of the shed. I'm going to end up putting a couple, tall apple trees.
Okay.
So we get some nice apple trees out of that, and that'll kind of help hide the shed from the street, you know? So we're going to do some landscaping and stuff around it.
Looks like metal roof. Is it a metal siding as well?
Yeah. Metal roof, metal siding,
any wood to it at all?
Just the interior framing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wood framing, but metal. It's primarily for storage. It's got some nice windows. Have you thought about outfitting it as kind of a, you know, the man cave, so to speak?
You know, it might become like a hangout spot or something. We, you know, honestly, it depends on we haven't had much time to mess with it just because it's been so snowy and muddy. And so when I first got it, I was in a rush. I went ahead and just installed like a light switch and just a light. That way I could actually work out there if I needed to. But we're going to figure out the flow of it once spring and summer.
You had mentioned solar. Are you going to put panels on the shed at all? Are you thinking about getting some solar power out there for the shed?
Yeah. So originally, you know, I'm not afraid of running power. You know, we're doing all the electric in the house and everything like that, but I wanted to avoid having to deal with permits. And I was like, I really just don't want to spend a lot of money to add like a sub panel and then go through the permitting process. You're talking like thousands of dollars at that point for everything. And so I think it was one of your episodes I was listening to. You're talking about the portable batteries. Mm-hmm. And so I bought an EcoFlow. I think it's like a 10,000 or a 1,000 watt portable battery. Mm-hmm. And I have a solar panel that I've installed on the shed for right now.
Nice.
I've installed on the fence for right now.
Sure.
To actually power the shed. So this spring, I'll probably add some outlets and other things. I don't plan on putting like any heavy power tools out there or anything. It'd be nice to have like the lawnmower battery or something out there.
Yeah.
Just being to have lights and other things out there would be nice.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll mount the solar panel to the roof eventually. I think that would probably be a better option.
Does it face a direction that's better? I mean, the fence is not a bad idea, to be honest.
Yeah. I really like the fence idea. I don't know. It seems like it'd be better on the roof.
Okay.
It seems like it'd get more direct sun all the time, and I wouldn't have to worry so much about the angles of the panels.
For sure. Yeah. But you've got, as I look at your shed, the doors, what direction do the doors face there on your
shed? They open out towards, from the fence.
But is it south? Is it east? Is it west? Is it north? Those doors open to the what? What direction?
Oh, man, I'm directionally challenged, Jim. This is a terrible I think it would be west.
Okay, so the doors open to the west. Well, you could still, the top of that shed is pretty flat. Now, you got some trees there that could potentially block it, you know, could potentially block that. But you know, you're in the back corner, you should be able to get, you know, actually you could probably get that EcoFlow, right? It's probably got a 500 watt inverter of getting solar power in. And so you could, what I figured is 6 100 watt panels. They never really get to 600 watts anyways, just because you never get maximum usage on that, has been pretty good. Or you could just get one big, 450 or 500 watt panel. How big is the panel that you have right now?
I got a 400 watt panel. Okay. And I got a bifacial one. So that way I don't have to worry about if it's partially shaded or not. It just, and it's one of those things, like, I really don't need that much power as of right now. It's just controlling a light and everything. And so I think right now, if I were to leave the light on continuously, the battery would run for, I think, 16 hours or something.
Yeah.
So, like, more than enough battery power for what I'm doing.
You got a pretty good light then if you're doing that. I mean, a small light would run forever off that.
Yeah.
You got a kilowatt of power there that's out there. And then you're probably able to charge it. The only what's keeping me from putting a battery in my shed in the backyard is we get 20 below. And that's not necessarily bad on the battery. It just won't charge at those kinds of temperatures, right?
And then right now mine's not charging at all. No. It's the cell temperature is too cold. That's what it tells me every single day.
Yeah. And you might think about putting that, you could insulate that in some way and then put a little kind of, it doesn't take much, just some kind of heating device to kind of, during the winter, keep the cell batteries up. The battery would run the heater a little bit. The solar panel would keep it charged during the day. There's an option for, I think it's a great option. Uyghur turned me on to that way back in the day. He thought before I started running power out there, he was like, you ought to put one of those batteries. But that was my hang up too. It's like, well, it gets really cold in the summer. It gets really hot and those batteries can struggle a little bit, but it sounds like it's working for you when the temperatures are the right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, even with the cold temperatures too, it's holding a charge. I mean, every day it's, because when it's hooked up to the solar panel, it'll at least come on during the day.
Yeah.
And it tells me, it's still 62% charged. Yeah. And that's what it was, a couple weeks ago. So it, at least it's holding its charge in the cold.
Yeah.
And it's still usable. So
yeah. It's a little inefficient in when it gets colder, mm-hmm. but you're not running a ton of stuff off of it, right? You just need a light.
No, and I'm not even doing anything in there right now anyway.
Right.
So,
right. The EcoFlow app is pretty good. Does not have great home assistant integration, right? But it does work well on the app. Is that a problem for you at all that you can't get it? Really? I mean, it's really just the app that it works with most of the time, right?
I don't think so. I don't, like, the app is kind of nice just to be able to, like, I guess, turn on and off the power. Mm-hmm. But I really don't find myself using the app that much. Really? And I guess seeing how much the solar panel is working, because I basically just installed it, so that's kind of the things I'm using for it. I want to integrate it with Home Assistant, but I'm honestly not sure what I would do with the integration.
Just monitor. It's not very good, to be honest,
right?
And it takes a lot of work, and I'm not sure it works very well in only certain models, right? I didn't find it to be very helpful. I'm addicted, I'll show it on the screen here, I'm addicted to this monitor right here. It's showing the percentage it's charged. Is it charging? Is it discharging? You can see the input and the output that's going on currently. I catch myself at work. Like, it's sunny outside. I wonder
how many watts am I getting? Exactly. No, I definitely do. I mean, especially right now because I just installed it. So the most I've seen my solar panel work so far, I think, is like 20 watts, which is nothing for how big the panel is. So, it's just been very, it gets very overcast here in Central Ohio.
How long have you had it?
I think only about a month now.
Okay.
The shed got installed like towards the end of December, I think. Okay. So,
yeah, you should have some sunny days, and you should be in the winter with that 400 watt panel. If you can get it situated just right, you can make 1.5 to 2 kilowatt hours of energy, in a day, probably with that panel. So that wouldn't be too bad. Any other, like, when you think of having a shed out there, then any other wishes of things that you may think that you, from a tech standpoint, that you might go with out there? I've always thought a weather station would be nice to have on the shed. In your area, it's kind of in an open space,
So I do have a weather station already. I have thought about mounting it to the shed. But one of the things I did almost immediately, because I have all the smart home devices already. I mean, literally all of our lights are smart home and we have sensors and everything like that. I installed a Zoos Z-Wave light switch in the shed, along with a motion sensor. So hypothetically, whenever it is actually nice out and the power stays on all the time because of the solar panel, I can just walk into the shed and the lights will turn on, via motion.
Yeah.
So I've done that. I think I'm going to put like a door sensor on there. I don't really need to, but I have a couple extra door sensors, so why not?
Yeah.
I don't know of any other automation. So
would you insulate? Do you think of putting any, you know, rock wool in there or styrofoam into the between the, you know, the stud bays to get little insulation in there?
Not right now. You know, I've looked into it, but I don't think that's a priority at the moment.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm hanging out in my shed. So I have the heat on. I have a heater and an air conditioner. And so I've been thinking, I did styrofoam on the top, right? I bought styrofoam sheets and cut it in, but I'm thinking of doing rock wool in the bottom part of it, just to kind of help keep the heat in and keep the rodents, you know?
Yeah. That's what we did in our Three Seasons room. We used rock wool for all the walls. So works well.
Yeah. At the same time, we showed this picture a second ago. Let me bring it back up for folks. So at the same time, we kind of overlooked the garden, but you've been spending some time, I'm assuming, putting a garden in around it. You'd mentioned kind of half your yard is kind of garden work. TJ, it's a lot of work. Like, you really want to do this? Like, these gardens are a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Yeah, we have really terrible like clay soil. Not as bad as like, you know, Kentucky or Tennessee with like their red clay soil. But we have pretty terrible soil. So we've done a bunch of raised garden beds. We have 12 raised garden beds altogether. They're all like 2.5 by 9 feet. So they're pretty decent size. I got two beds of strawberries. We have a bed of garlic. And then the other stuff is just like annual stuff that we plant every year, like tomatoes or peppers, all that stuff. I like gardening. I don't like the watering when it comes to gardening.
Now, this is tech can take care of this, right? I mean,
oh, for sure.
There's so many smart watering things now, right? Are you in that space? Or are you going to pick up a bunch of those?
Yeah, this is my challenge every year, honestly. So we don't have like a traditional irrigation system you would have for your lawn, right? Because just the neighborhood, nobody has an irrigation system around us. And so I looked into an irrigation system, and the company that wanted to install like a very basic irrigation system, we're not even talking like 12 beds. I think it was like 2 to 4 beds or something like that. They wanted like $6,000. And that's like for like the backflow preventer and, you know, the second water meter, so you don't have to pay the sewage fees and all this stuff. And I was like, I'm not paying $6,000 for that. That is crazy. And so last year I used hose timers. If you don't know what a hose timer is, it's basically it goes in between the hose spigot and the hose, and they have a bunch of different options. You can do like a Bluetooth one or just like a manual timer one, like you would like your Christmas lights or something like that. They have, you know, app controlled ones. There's a bunch of different options. They're not very expensive. You know, I think they range from $10 to, you know, $40 typically. Last year I used Zigbee based ones. So they connected directly to Home Assistant, and then I just used schedules or automations through Home Assistant to water the garden. That worked mostly well. But the problem is limitation of how many zones you can have, because you think of a traditional hose spigot, you might be able to get like an adapter to split that into like 4 different hoses. But you still only have, you know, 3 or 4 of those hose timers that you can actually use. And so basically everything was just getting watered the same exact way. This year, I'm working on providing a solution for myself where I can actually water all the beds individually, which is a hard task. I mean, I have 12 raised garden beds. I have a couple garden beds in the front. I have garden beds in the back for like the sitting area. So, I mean, I'm talking 14 to 20 different zones potentially of watering. And so I've started building my own product. I'm just using basically just like little water solenoids hooked up to a sprinkler controller. Mm-hmm. So you can buy these little, I think it's like $10. It's like a 1/2-inch water solenoid. It's just normally closed, and you apply power to it and it opens up. And it's $10 each, which is not a bad deal. And I'm going to hook that directly into the sprinkler controller in order to water everything.
Oh, hold on, I'll come back. I do not know what's going on here.
Man, it's all kinds of nice.
No, I had this problem last week too. I'm not sure what's going on with Restream. So I don't know if that's Restream or me, whatever. You know, we just talk about Joe says in chat that he's thinking about a DIY solution for a sprinkler valve on a Wi-Fi switch. And that certainly there are some ways to do DIY. I don't know why I'm not excited about putting some of those components outside with water. I mean, the they break down fast. You know, it's anything with water and sun, and you know, you're immediately a thirding the life of some of those. And then in here in Nebraska, any irrigation I put in, for the most part, I got to take out, right? It can't sit out during the winter. Everything will break, everything will snap. Now, if I done in-ground irrigation, they can come out. You can blow those things out. I mean, I imagine you could do that with the other stuff as well. It's just a lot of maintenance. Have you thought of a couple years ago, there's, I saw those watering devices that you put on your fence post and one hose, and then you program it and it shoots all the different areas. I mean, they're not cheap, but if you thought of something like that to take care of the watering for you, as opposed to, it's the one thing I don't like about it, it's kind of wasteful because it's got to shoot the water through the air. And so you're losing a lot of water that way. Right. But any thoughts on those?
Yeah, we actually saw some of those at CES. I think one of the companies we saw was called Apier.
I think that's maybe who we had on. I'm trying to remember who we had. But
I think you had, it was a while ago. I think it was like Ira Green or something.
I think you're right.
I've seen a couple of those companies this year at CES, and I really like the idea. I don't know if it's really meant for gardening though, right? Okay. It seems like some of those, depending on how far away it is from the plants, it could actually damage them. Whereas grass, I don't think it would as much. But I don't know if I'm just like overthinking that.
No, I think you're probably right.
Especially with like fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
No, right on. Oftentimes you don't want the water on the leaves if you can avoid it. Although that's the way it rains. So like, you know, I don't know sometimes what to believe. Gardeners are always kind of crazy that way. Like, oh no, it's got to be the perfect situation and you got to come over and sing to it. Like, friends, they're just plants, you know.
Yeah, the leaves can't get wet is my favorite, because I have the same thought process. It's like, well, it rains, so does it die then? What's going on?
No, right. Yeah, like, oh no, the leaves will rot. And you're like, hey friends, it rains, you know that, right? I kind of buried the lead here. Let me go back to this picture a little bit. I didn't zoom in far enough on. There's some gear out there. Tell me what we're seeing out there.
Yeah, that's my Ubiquiti outdoor antenna. At one point, I was crazy. I actually had this at like the peak of my house, and I was able to get Wi-Fi like clear down the road. I no reason to do that, but you know, it was fun to do. That's my Ubiquiti outdoor access point, and then I have a UniView panoramic camera, so that that panoramic camera can see the entire backyard in one camera, which is pretty nice.
Have you picked up anything on it that is either worthy of talking about, like animals or anybody walk through your backyard or any of those kinds of things?
No, I think it was the year before, we had something digging up our yard, and we have a privacy fence around the entire backyard, so it's not like we can get like deer or anything back there.
They could jump the fence. They just don't, if they can't see the other side, they don't like to.
Right. You know, yeah. And they would have to have a good running start from wherever they are. Right, for sure. But yeah, we couldn't find out what was digging up the grass. And so one of the times I looked at the cameras at nighttime, we found out it was a skunk. And then the skunk joined us one night for a fire, which was really nice. So
did you get sprayed?
I did not. No. Oh, good. Yeah, no, it was, skunk was actually very brave. Because we had a giant fire going, just hanging out and everything, and that skunk just walked right by we weren't even there.
They're pretty calm. I mean, we had three come through our fire pit area, and then they went right underneath our deck. And then I was like, it's time to go in, guys. I don't think we want to be out here too long. They usually.
And then the next day, like brought a friend, which is even more messed up. It's like, now there's two of them. Yeah. I don't want to have two of you back here.
Yeah. They're pretty benign. I mean, except for the smell, they're pretty benign. Yours was digging up the yard. Uncle Marv, who was on last week, says, look, Jim, Ubiquiti, it's a sign.
I heard that conversation. You need to get Ubiquiti, Jim. I mean, yeah, that's the answer right now.
I think it probably is. I think it probably is. I just gotta, well, maybe the problem is maybe my router is starting I guess this is the router. I guess that's maybe starting to go. I got to get that figured out. I haven't had that problem on Saturday mornings when I'm hanging out with Dave Jackson. So maybe it's Restream. I don't know. We'll get it. We'll get it figured out. As we roll over in this picture here, let me see. Let's see. How do I do this? Why is it not letting me? There we go. I'll scroll out. There's your solar panel. So I'm assuming that you've got it mounted there to the fence. Is that south facing, or are you getting good sun when it is out? Is that a good spot for it to be?
Yeah, so it's not terrible right now because the winter time it doesn't get the best best sun right now, but you know it does pretty decent right now. In the summertime it'll be a lot better for us.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it looks like an adjustable mount, so you can get in the summer you want to get it a little bit more flat. And then what's going on?
I even bought like a digital like gauge too, so I can tell exactly. You know, I was like, I'm going to do this, I might as well do it right. You know,
how much did you pay for it for the digital?
I think it was like $10 or $20. It was very cheap.
Send me the link to it. I want to put one on just that sits there, so I can kind of like, oh yeah, it's at this, and then I need to move. Yeah. I built mine so I can move them up and down. What are we looking at right here? What's?
Oh yeah, that's a Rayolink panorama solar camera. Rayolink sent me that to test out. And honestly, I don't like solar powered cameras, especially in Ohio. They just, especially in the winter time, the battery just drains on them. There's not enough sun for it to recharge. This thing has been installed for, I think, since basically we got the house, I have never touched it. It just works.
Just does its thing. The battery hasn't gone. I'm sure it's an internal battery. Can you replace it if the
probably not.
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't looked into that. I used it to watch the birds. You know, we had some bird feeders that were right there next to it, and so I just used it to watch the birds.
No, that's a good way to do it. And there's those, you know, I reviewed one of those too. I have the bird, I have the hummingbird feeder. But the bird feeders with cameras have gotten super popular, right? And so they're pretty good. John's asking if you've got the weather station. Is it out? Can I see it in this picture, or is it
that picture? I don't know if I have a picture of it. It's the EcoWit weather station. They make a bunch of smart home sensors for outside stuff, but I use their soil moisture sensors, which Gavin turned me on to. And I have a couple other things, but the soil moisture sensors work the best. The weather station is very nice to have because we have automations for when it's raining, or we tie that into the irrigation system as well.
Yeah.
So if it's rained in the past 24 hours, it doesn't water at all, or it doesn't water as much. So that is a very nice thing to have.
Yeah, it is. It's handy from that standpoint to get local. One of the crazy things about weather, though, is it's getting so good local. You know, where it, you know, you can kind of download some data or have access to data. Although I'm finding some of the better weather location, you know, the weather services require API access in a subscription. So in that case, you know, a subscription's maybe $15 a month. A weather station's a couple $100. If you're going to use it a lot, it might be a little more handy to have a weather station instead of a subscription. I don't know. Have you subscribed to any weather APIs before to get the most accurate local stuff?
I have not. No, our weather is so fickle that I go out in the morning and I look at what the weather is, because it could have changed from what they told me last night. Yeah. It's just every day it could be different. And so I go outside and look at it, unfortunately.
I have a weather, not sort of weather station. I have a fire tablet that I've turned into a full-time weather that goes to a weather service that then brings in for me some pretty good information about it's local. I'm using local in quotes. It's Bellevue. It's whatever they're getting. It's probably not right here, but it's close enough. 7-day forecast on the side, a 24-hour on the bottom. And some charts and graphs on where the stuff has been. And I find that works out pretty well for me. I don't have it tied into any home automation. I don't do any irrigation. I'm a survival of the fittest farmer, so to speak. If it dies, shouldn't have lived.
Wasn't meant to be.
You know, I've tried this method. It's not, I don't know if it's a great method, but my daughter cracks up about it all the time, is I'm like, yeah, I plant something in a location, and if it dies, I don't plant it there again. Then you plant something else. Like, oh, okay, the hostas didn't live there. Let's try, you know, whatever. Fill in the blank. We were talking about this in pre-show, and I kind of got, I kind of overdid it last year with sunflowers. They're really good for the soil. They bring back nutrients. If you've got some soils that are nutrient lacking, they'll bring nutrients back to them. They're good. And just, they grow in just about, they're kind of a weed in some regards. They grow in just about any situation. Have you been, TJ, have you been bitten by the sunflower bug yet? Because they do just really well just about anywhere.
Well, and they're so beautiful, aren't they? I mean, this year we're going crazy with the flowers. So I'm the type of person, I don't like to maintain my grass. It's nice to have grass in the areas that we hang out, which is like the backyard. But the front yard, I have no reason to have grass in the front yard. It doesn't serve me any purpose. And so this year we're actually turning, I'm going to start with half the front yard and turning it into all wildflowers. And we have a good assortment of, you know, different varieties of sunflowers. There's some red ones and some gold ones and some odd colored ones that I find online, and I'm like, that would look cool. And I buy them. But we also grow what's called super snack sunflowers, where they're actually edible sunflower seeds. So you roast them and you eat them just like you normally would, like a sunflower seeds you get at like the gas station or whatever.
Yeah.
So we grow a lot of those. Those ones are cool because the heads get ginormous. I mean, they're so big that you basically have to support them, because at a certain point they start falling. And once they reach a certain point, the birds and squirrels and everybody else is going to start eating them. So we grow a lot of sunflowers, and I'm sure this year we're going to grow even more.
Yeah, they're incredibly beautiful. They're easy to grow. I think if you've ever tried growing things and they died on you, just grow sunflowers. Now they will come back. Just know one sunflower, you know, plant is going to produce 100 the next year and 10,000 the year after that. So, like, you have to be really careful. I'm in my third year of doing this, and I think I'm going to have to do some severe weeding at some point to pull. And it's pretty easy. They come out pretty easy, right, from that standpoint. And actually, I kept my stocks from this last year, so I just cut them down and I piled them all up. The birds lived in them all fall and most of the winter, been eaten out of them. And then I'll send those through the chipper and use those as ground cover in the spring. So they kind of make full circle. I was telling you in the pre-show, I did my gardening too well this year, where I cut everything down, grinded it up, put it down. Then we had this massive windstorm. It's all gone. It's in somebody else's yard. Now I have literally no ground cover left. It's just, so I'm going to have to do some things in the spring to get it done. But I do like the sunflower. Sarah, everybody knows my wife, Sarah, said to me, next year, maybe not as much. I'm thinking about, is your, yeah, she's like,
man,
settle down.
Wouldn't like my house then. I go crazy.
Settle down, so. Big guy. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, you're going to turn your front into some wildflowers. Are your neighbors going to be okay with that? I mean, are they expecting, in some neighborhoods, you know how neighborhoods are, you know? In a spot where your neighbors are going to may complain that you don't have a manicured lawn?
I mean, I guess we're going to find out, because okay. I haven't asked anybody. I've slowly just been converting different parts of the yard into gardens since we bought the house 3 years ago. And so, like, at the end of the driveway, for example, I changed that all into wildflowers. And actually, we feed the birds these, I think they call them black oil sunflower seeds. We just get them at Menards, nothing, you know, fancy. Yeah, I think it's like the cheapest bird seed I can get.
For sure.
But last year I took like cupfuls of those and just threw them at the end of the driveway where I dug these new garden beds, and we had hundreds of sunflowers coming up. And most people that pass by, they actually like it. I was out there working on it one day, and this older couple was walking by, and they're like, you know, we just love seeing all the flowers at your house. You know, it's just, you do such a great job. Maybe you should help your neighbor out. You know, maybe they could do a better job.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So
son now, and
I guess so. But, you know, I actually don't know if I'm allowed to do it. Like, we live in a pretty,
you don't have any
city. Isn't like, yeah, we don't have an HOA.
Ohio,
our city is too crazy.
Ohio is a big rural. I think, like, you have Cincinnati and Cleveland, maybe Dayton. And then everything else is rural, it seems like, in Ohio.
For Columbus, too. You're going to leave me out of there altogether,
sorry.
I guess?
Well, jeez. Columbus, I guess. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like, okay. I don't think anybody really cares that much. I don't know if it's like against like the city bylaws or something. So we'll find out.
Okay.
But I actually, one of my friends, he works for the city. And so he's helped me a little bit, like I'm allowed to plant trees on the street, like that little strip of grass in between the sidewalk and the street.
Yeah.
We're allowed to plant trees there. So like we've both been planting trees in the street. So I've been doing little by little every year. And I'm just like, if somebody says something at some point, I guess I'll stop. But until that happens, I'm going to keep doing it. This year I've been saving a lot of cardboard boxes because, my process for getting rid of grass is I basically put down cardboard boxes and then I put down soil on top of that. And then that smothers the grass, but it also allows the new seeds to start and everything. And so it always looks very, very janky whenever I'm starting the process because I'm putting cardboard boxes down and putting soil down.
Yeah.
But after several months, it starts to look a little different. So,
well, I wasn't too worried about my neighbors as I was growing these, but then I was asking them questions and my neighbor next door, he's a little more like what you're doing. Like he's got some big wildflower areas in his front yard. And as I was talking to my neighbors, one of the other neighbors was complaining. And I was like, oh, I wonder what they say about my yard. So I was like, we have this strip. It's maybe a foot, 18 inches between the driveway and the property. We have a retaining wall for the property downstream. And we put sunflower seeds in there. I let those grow and I made like a sunflower fence with all these sunflowers. Now they're 8 feet tall. These are the big ones, right? And then if you get enough of them, they hold each other up. And so all summer I had a fence. I had a sunflower fence. And I kind of liked it. Now, not everybody, that's not everybody's gig, right? There were some folks that they would lean over and hit the cars sometimes and some of those kinds of things. So, but when in the fall, this fall, when I took it down, my neighbor down the street over to the right says, ah, I can finally see you now. I was like, oh, he didn't like the fence. He was not a fan of the fence. So I probably won't do a sunflower fence this year. Definitely will keep the sunflowers away from the solar panels for sure.
Yeah.
Right? As we think about that. But so as we, to kind of wrap up the irrigation piece on this, where do you think you'll land with irrigation for the spring? What are you hoping for from an automation standpoint? What's the best case scenario for you?
Well, my biggest hurdle at this point is figuring out where I'm going to store the components. Because you touched on this, is that the valves are relatively cheap, but if you leave them out in the sun all the time, they're going to deteriorate. I mean, it's going to be no time. You're eventually going to have a leak and all that good stuff. So I have to figure out where to place these valves. I'm going to have 12 to 20 different valves. And they're relatively small. You know, I could build something on the fence or something. I really don't want to put one of those giant like in-ground irrigation boxes in with like the cover and stuff like that. I feel like that's too extreme, but maybe I just need to do that. But like I have to figure out where to put the valves at. Everything else, I have an idea of how it works and everything, but it's just that part I'm struggling with.
Yeah. Hey, those irrigation things, I know the big panels, they've got a lid on them. They're meant to go in ground.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to. Like I think you can just set those up, use the cover, have them above ground, but have them like let them take the punishment of the sun and the weather, and it can kind of protect whatever you have. And then in the fall, if you do need to take them down and put them away, put them in your shed for the winter so they don't experience the full blast of the winter. And it's the really cold days that kill them, right? I mean,
right.
I guess those plastics just don't hold up very well. Even in the shed, they do better than outside in the cold. You could have those in those devices or in those containers, but you don't have to bury them. I think some people think you got it because that's how you see them.
That's a good idea. Yeah, you can just leave it on top.
Yeah, just set it up on top and they're open on the bottom. And so, you can set it on there, but it'll protect them from the sun. So, well, it gets me thinking, I mean, spring's just around the corner, right? I mean, it did Punxsutawney Phil, I think Punxsutawney Phil saw his shadow. So I think we're talking 6 more weeks of winter, but that's just March. And then hopefully we'll start seeing some. When do you plant? Like what's your... Do you plan indoors first, or are you just like, hey, if it's just going to grow when the seed germinates outside?
Yeah. So this is the part that we're always awful at, mainly because we've never really had a space to start seeds and stuff until recently. And so last year we started some seeds, but a lot of them got moldy and stuff. So we actually, we went out to like the garden center and just bought a lot of plant starts and whatever survived, we planted. This year, I'm going to utilize my actual office space for work and start seeds in there. Because some of the stuff, like we grow a lot of peppers, for example. Peppers take a long time to actually start and become something useful. So peppers, we're going to start inside. We grow a lot of loofah, like you wash yourself with the loofah kind of thing. We grow a lot of those, but those take forever to grow as well. So we're going to start those inside. I would say half the stuff that we have this year that we're going to grow is all direct sow. So we can just plant it as soon as the last frost.
Yeah. So, there's some nice home automation or some nice lighting, let's just say, for indoor plants that you can now, I mean, you can tune it to the exact, you know, you can, you, so the exact temperature that you want it to be, you can tune them, you can turn them on and off at intervals and really, then from a humidity standpoint, you can really control the humidity. You know, you talked about some of those molding, right? And there is there's some indoor sensors now that you could do it to turn on a humidifier if it gets, so if it gets too humid in the space where the plants are, turn on this plug and that'll turn on a humidifier in the area and start drying it out. So some cool things you could do there too with home automation.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do this year, Kyle and Justin that we were talking about earlier from CES, they have a company called Apollo Automation. They make something called a Pump One. And I sent you a link for this on Discord so you can share it off if you want to. Yeah. But this is an automated watering solution where it basically just takes a tube and it puts it into a bottle and you can pump that water into something else. And so I have this that I'm going to use to actually water all the seeds because it's going to be in my office. My office is only 10 or 15 minutes away. But I'll be able to use this to actually water everything. And I'll use the soil moisture sensors as well from EcoWit to actually monitor how wet everything is.
Am I showing the right thing?
Yeah, this is it. So this thing's pretty cool. It's based on ESP Home. So it's a Wi-Fi device, Wi-Fi smart home device. Ties into Home Assistant very easily. And you can trigger it and send water from the bottle to the plants or whatever else you want to do.
Yeah,
It's actually a very powerful pump too. I mean, they had it where they took the hose up like an entire tree, and it still shot out water. So it can go pretty long distance.
And it's it's $33, $32.99. I'm assuming that's for the pump and the tube. You supply your own water device, whatever you want to do, right? On that from there. Yeah, you know, and I actually thought about a system like this for the outside. Which is, and they make these big pumps where I would get I'd get a 55 gallon drum and fill that up with water or use roof rainwater to fill that up. Right. And then pump that into the various areas with these kinds of pumps to, you know, that same idea, instead of coming out of the hose, you're drawing it from a water source. Those always have their drawbacks too, because now you have standing water in your yard, you know, the mosquitoes or, you know, sometimes the plants or the stuff that gets into the water starts stinking. It starts, you know, it's growing algae in the water. So that's always been the drawback for me. This has also been for this kind of solution that we're talking about here too. It's always been my worry about leaving that water around too long. Cause you got to clean. Then you got the maintenance of cleaning those water vessels out on a fairly regular basis, you know, every couple of weeks at least. So I just kill the plants. Either they survive naturally or they die. So
that's why you got to do all native plants. That's why I like all the actual like flowers and stuff that I try to plant. I want it to be native. That way I don't have to water as much. Yeah. I want it to be as hands off as possible. Yeah. Like we try not. I have a couple arborvitaes, and those things need so much water in order to live.
Yes.
But that's the only thing I have in my entire yard that requires a ton of water. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I've see hostas have worked well for me in our region. Underneath, you know, they kind of are shaded. There's about 9,000 varieties of them that you can get. You know, they come up every year, and then if you kill them 1 year, they just come back the next. Like, it's really super hard to kill those things. Hydrangeas were another one we tried this year that I've had some varying success with them. You know, they too also are water. You know, you come home from work and the leaves are all, you know, you're like, oh, I guess it needs a little more water. So that may be one that's going to, you know, I don't know, have to, maybe it'll just die.
It'll see itself out. That's how it works.
We say self-select. Maybe it'll just self-select its way out of there. Anyways, well, we'll have to kind of come back on in the fall and see how the garden goes. Let's wrap it a little bit with CES. I want to show a picture that's kind of the epitome. When I think of CES, this picture is exactly what I envision on CES, right? Somebody pitching their wares. This is some famous guy, I think, right? I forget his name.
Jonathan Scott.
Yeah.
From the Property Brothers.
Yeah. And he's out, you know, they've obviously hired him. Looks like Mike Hugh maybe is out there. They hired him to do some kind of pitch or whatever. But this is this most of CES? Is this, am I describing it accurately?
That feels like it's pretty much it, right? I mean, supposedly they have this good partnership. He was at this MyQ event that we went to. We spent a lot of money on alcohol that night. It was an open bar, unlimited alcohol.
Wow, that's
I think the group we were with probably spent like $1,000 in liquor and everything else. So yeah, it was a pretty fun event. It was one of those things that I've never had anything happen like that before. But it was funny. We actually, the photo you're showing is my wife, Nicole. They were going around and they're like, if you want to have a picture with me or anything like that, we're going to do this little thing in the back room. He goes, even if you want me to like record a video for your mom. And, her mom likes, Jonathan Scott. And so, somebody behind her volunteered her. And he was like, well, come after and I'll get you a video. So this is what they're recording a video for her.
Wow. Yeah. I just, the red drapes and the, you know, the pop-up, you know, displays in the back and what, you have a cocktail favorite. What do you think you drank the most of, with the bar being open? Cause you know, I imagine they had probably a few good drinks there, right?
I mean, so I'm only a beer guy, so okay. I only drink beer, which is awful for Vegas, first of all, because all the beer is very expensive.
Yeah.
It's like $13 for a beer if you want to go somewhere. But they also just don't have any good options because everybody's ordering liquor. So not a good place to be a beer drinker, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, some of the drinks they were talking about were like $80 or $90 for a pour. So, I mean, it had to be some really good stuff.
Yikes. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't have to be in Vegas.
Yeah, nothing, that's true. Yeah.
Nothing has to be. What's going on here in this?
So this is, have you ever heard of The Verge? It's a, yeah. Tech review, yeah. Tech website.
Yeah.
There's a podcast called The Verge Cast. And it's got the two co-hosts are there, Neelay Patel and then, David Pierce. And they have this, a segment inside their show called Brendan Carr is a Dummy. Brendan Carr is the FCC chair. He makes all kinds of terrible decisions. They have this running joke on the show though, that it's, they have a segment called, Brendan Carr is a Dummy and the, it's America's favorite podcast within a podcast is what they say.
Nice.
And so I wanted to go to the live show, that they were recording in Vegas. And so I decided to have some shirts made and I gave them each one as well.
Nice.
So I thought that it was pretty funny. Everybody got a good laugh out of it.
Yeah.
They sent me some swag afterwards as well.
That's cool.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. It a good time.
That's cool. Yeah. That's the fun part. The couple times I was there, the best parts were the meetups and hanging out with people. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, looking at the products and stuff is kind of fun, right? Seeing the future is kind of fun, but I think it's a lot more fun to hang out with folks. You know, anything else did you get outside of Vegas at all? Did you see anything outside? So, you know, I mean, you think of Vegas and you're like, it's just in the middle of a hole and there's nothing around it. There's a few things around it. Did you get out at all?
Yeah, the last couple of days we got the CES sniffles. So we were sick after interacting. I think there was like 150,000 people there.
The alcohol.
Yeah. I mean, we were drinking literally every day, staying out till like 1 or 2 o'clock. So it was a recipe for disaster, before we even got there, we decided we're going to go to the Grand Canyon. So we drove from Vegas. We got a rental car. We drove from Vegas. We saw the Hoover Dam on the way, which is really cool.
Yep.
crazy feat of engineering, especially for the time. I mean, it's just amazingly big. Like, I couldn't imagine building that without modern machinery and stuff.
Pictures don't justify it. Like, you when you're on it, you're like, this is huge.
Yeah. And you're just like looking down in the water. You're like, if I fell, I would like, there's no way I would survive this. I mean, it's just so high up. I mean, it's crazy. And I imagine there was a lot more water at one time as well. You can kind of see on the rocks where the water was at one point. But we saw the Hoover Dam. That was kind of cool. And then we eventually ended up in the Grand Canyon. And I gotta say, I'm a little ignorant when it comes to the Grand Canyon. I, for some reason, didn't realize where the Grand Canyon was and that it snowed there. Because we got there at nighttime. And as we're driving up, I was like, why is there snow on the ground? And it's just, I've never seen a photo of the Grand Canyon with snow. And so I just never thought about it. But we saw it. We were able to drive around. They had just opened the roads back up around the Grand Canyon, like a couple days before we got there, because they had a real bad snowstorm. But we were sick, so we kind of just drove around, saw the Grand Canyon. Amazing, amazing place to be. So I'd like to go back again at some point when I'm not sick. But
yeah, springtime's a little bit better than winter's not bad. I mean, it's not terrible, but springtime's a little bit better in that. Stay away from summer.
Do
not go in.
They have warnings everywhere. It's like you need to not be like inexperienced to go in this area or whatever. I mean, it was very obvious where you were not supposed to go.
You want to, you need to be ready. You need to be in fairly good shape, especially if you're going to hike down into the canyon, right? And so it just is, but it's beautiful. I mean, there's a lot of, I think it's a very, maybe it's not underrated. We talk a lot about it, but it's a very beautiful site. To me, I've been there a couple times, and it doesn't feel like it's been too overrun yet. You know, some of the national parks are just overrun, you know, and you're like, this still feels, there's still some spots where you feel like you can be out there all by yourself, right? And of course, beautiful photography. I mean, if you're into photography at all, you can get some dark spots out there where you can really see the night sky for a long time. So, so good for you. Yeah, super cool. Did you get, in Vegas, did you see anything? Did you catch any shows, or did you do anything along those lines, or did you just pretty much stay with CES?
Yeah, pretty much just stayed with CES. I mean, it's one of those things. I've never been to Vegas until this trip, and I don't mind walking when I'm on vacation. We pretty much just walk everywhere. But by the time you add like walking in all the buildings, going up and down the stairs, it's just so much walking. Yeah. And so by the time we get on with the actual show. We'd go and do a networking event with other people and meet up with others. And then we might stay out, but we unfortunately did not catch any shows this trip.
Okay.
I wanted to go see something in the Sphere or something, but the Sphere is very expensive.
Cool. Yeah.
And I forget, they had something on there. I think it was like Wicked or Oz or something like that. None of us wanted to go see it at that time. So,
Yeah. I'd love to see a Raiders game at the new stadium there. That would be something I'd go and see. They're not too popular. So it's not like it's jammed. Everyone is jammed. So it'd be cool. Sphere would be pretty cool too. The technology that's gone into that I remember, I mean, it's been a while since I've done a CES, but I remember the days when Wi-Fi was impossible. Is it still that way when you're on the floor to get any kind of Wi-Fi access or for cell phones to work? We had all kinds of problems when I was there trying to do that, 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, we went as press, Gavin and I, and we had access to like Wi-Fi in the press rooms, but basically we did not have cellular Wi-Fi the whole time we were there. Yeah. It's just like, and I have a dual SIM on my iPhone. I have AT&T and T-Mobile, and both of those were useless no matter where I was. And so like for work, especially, we were 3-hour time difference for Vegas compared to where I'm at for my house. And people would contact me for work, and I literally could not contact them. I would have to wait until I got back home that night.
It does feel like you're on a different planet. It's weird. The experience I've had in the couple years that I was there, you're in the convention center, and it just feels, I don't know. It felt so different. Everything's, the conference space is gigantic. You can walk for days. I don't know. It just feels so different with all the technology, all the lights. You come out, they had all the robots outside for you guys this year, right? You could go out and see all the robot cars. I did see a review of somebody who took the shuttle. That's not what they call it, but
the Zooks or whatever.
I think so. The completely autonomous shuttle there. Did you guys get in one? to try?
I did not get in one. No, I wanted to do that one while I was there. I've done Waymo before. I did Waymo when I was in California. And that was amazing. So I was interested to try the Zoox one, but I never got the chance to.
Yeah, they're not pretty. There's four seats. You know, two doors and four seats, and they face each other, and, you know, I guess they get you there.
So I mean, I'm all for autonomous vehicles. I think that is one thing that I can definitely get behind, especially with the way some people drive anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, as we wrap this thing up, let me go to some chat stuff. Alex, come back to some chat. He did say, Alex in chat said, some weather services allow free access if you're sending data via your weather station. That would be cool. And Alex, I've gone back and forth on weather stations. I'm always afraid I'm going to buy one and immediately there's going to be a better. That's one of those, right, where you're just like, oh, I know I'm going to buy this thing. And then the other thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna buy it and I'll be like, well, that's cool. And, you know, I don't know if I'll use it as much maybe as I want to, or maybe I'll totally geek out on it. So I don't know. Do you, for your weather station, do you use it? Are you viewing it much? Do you use much of the data? I mean, you said earlier you use it for in the spring to when to water and some of those kinds of things, but do you find yourself using it to track what's going on right now? Oh, you muted. Sorry, TJ, you muted.
Yeah, that's how I actually track the weather for my house. I just look at that every day to find out what the temperature is.
Okay.
And I use it for different things too. Like we automate our lights, our interior house lights based off of that as well. And so they'll actually do adaptive lighting based off of the solar that the weather station's picking up. That's so there's a couple different things we're doing with it, that's but the data is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
how fast the wind is going, stuff like that.
That would be nice, locally especially, right? I find, you know, I've got weather. I mean, I have temperature in about every room, you know, with the devices, with the A-Lady devices, you know. You can just ask, just shout. It'll tell you. It's on my watch. It's on my phone. I've got iPads displaying it around the house. So, you know, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. John says out in chat, he says, weather stations can be pretty expensive. You know,
they are. I mean, they're always like, I feel like they're always $200 or more. Like I have the Eco It one. It's $200. I think the Tempest is like $300, if I remember correctly. That's another really popular one.
Does
they all
dump out the rain? Like, does it collect rain and then dump it out some kind of basis to measure the rain volume?
No, it's got this, like, I forget how they word it. It's like a hypersonic sensor. So it actually detects on, you know, the raindrops hitting the top of it or something like that. So, you know. Some hoopla.
Some kind of magic. That's
the amount of rain I don't trust on it. It tells me how much it supposedly rained in the past 24 hours and stuff like that. I don't trust that aspect of it. Okay. But it notifies me when it starts raining and stuff like that, which I do trust. And that one works pretty reliably.
I think that would be the most important. Although AccuWeather and some of those, MyWeather is kind of what I use. They're getting crazy good at alerting me, like by my location, of when it's going to start raining. And then they're like, hey, in 15 minutes, it's going to start raining. And that thing is crazy accurate. Like, okay, well, it's good to know. So I've been kind of filling in with some of those, you know, some of those pieces as well.
Yeah, I think Gavin has his where, like, if it starts raining and his windows are open, then it notifies him, for example. So that's a good use case for it too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, listen, I hadn't thought about like the light frequency based on the solar output of the day. So you could brighten it up a little bit. If it's going to be dim outside, you could have the lights come on and brighten it up a little bit, or dim them if it's going to be a big solar day, you know, if it's going to be very, very bright outside. We've gone to some really heavy shades in the house, and my wife, when it's really bright outside, she just closes them off, you know, she just doesn't want it that bright. Certainly there's some things we could do automation wise with those shades to, you know, to kind of do that for us if we wanted to. So cool. TJ, what's coming up on Home Tech FM? You guys got anything scheduled in the hopper that folks should be thinking about coming out and listening to?
Nothing directly scheduled right now, but I'm going to work on some Z-Wave stuff. There's an initiative right now. They're trying to sell the spectrum that basically Z-Wave uses. And a lot of other stuff. They're trying to sell it to a private company at the moment. And the industry is really coming against it because there's so many different devices that use this spectrum. So I think we're going to do a segment on that here soon, because that's a big deal if we can't get devices like Z-Wave and stuff anymore. So I think that'll be coming up here soon. We're going to work on that and maybe do some follow-up interviews for CES.
You know, you might want to look at, right, this happened in the microphone industry, right? Not that's the exact thing, but they phased out, right, this frequency in microphones over the years. And I wonder if there's a similarity between some of the things that had to happen there, wireless mics in that industry, and then maybe what could go. That would seem big I wonder how long it would take for it to start causing conflicts. And then would things just be like, would there be some kind of period where like it's got to switch over, or people have time to switch over? I don't know. How does that work?
Honestly, I don't know. That's kind of the annoying thing, is I didn't hear about it till CES. And I was talking to a couple people that are heavily in the Z-Wave industry, and they were telling me about it. And I was like, supposedly it's been going on for a couple of years now where they've been fighting it. But I've never heard of it until recently. So it's very confusing why nobody's been talking about it. And even now, like, I just did like a quick, you know, search for it on Google, and I can't find anything about it either. So we're going to have to find out some more information about this, because this is a big deal.
Well, you guys, you, Seth and Gavin out there weekly, right? Hometech.fm, if you want to catch that. And I always say it's a better podcast than this one, way more technical, and you guys are super smart. I appreciate you guys coming on the show here and always providing value. I'll have to get Seth back on. I haven't had him in a while, so I'll have to reach out to Seth and see if he'll jump in as well. He's a good guest. Gavin's coming on in, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks now, so we'll catch up with him. And appreciate you guys over there doing what you do. You get super nerdy, maybe not super, but you get pretty nerdy, and it's a good way to do it. So TJ, thanks for coming on tonight. Can you hang out while I close this thing up?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Well, just a couple of reminders on the way out. If you, like I said, if you are purchasing on Amazon, jump over to the affiliate link of theaverageguy.tv. Just click on the red. There's a red sentence. I always forget what that says. Something about affiliate, blah, blah. Click on it. It'll take you through to Amazon, and that helps out the network as well. Don't forget the Average Guy Network, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And you know that's Christian. You can check it out today, maplegrovepartners.com. We had him on just a couple weeks ago, and they're still doing $10 plans. So if you need hosting for anything, go with Maple Grove Partners. They're doing some great work over there. Him and Gary are doing a bang-up job, so make sure you check that out before you go buy hosting from somebody that you don't know. And with that, I'll say big thanks to our Patreon subscribers, and that we are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, not here at theaverageguy.tv/live. TJ was this week. Andrew Morris, who, if you've been around the show a long time, Andrew was on show number one with me. And I think he did a couple hundred shows before he dropped off. Things got busy. We're going to have him back on next week and catch up with all the things that are going on with him. Week after that, Erin Lawrence, and we'll have her back. I had her on right before Christmas, TJ, and she was in a hotel in LA, and halfway through the show, burp, internet went down. She was out, and she was texting me behind the scenes. Fortunately, I had Uyghur with me, and we were able to finish up the show. But have you guys ever done a show on Home Tech where it just is failing and nothing's working and things aren't going well? You had to come back around to it. Has that ever happened to you guys?
Well, our stuff doesn't work all the time, so it's a weekly challenge for us. But we usually eventually get there. It just takes a couple hours sometimes.
Okay, well, it's
like you're very efficient. Good. When you start the podcast, you just go. Like when start the podcast, we dilly daddle for like 2 hours. So
yeah, you're right. You guys chit chat and then do some other things, and then it takes Seth a while. You're right. I'm super efficient. We get in, we get out, we do a little post show. I always post it Saturday mornings to the feed. That's just what I do. So if you want to join us live, if you want to come out and see the chaos that is live, there'll be a few edits this week that I'll have to make to this one, clean it up a little bit. You can join us Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. If you want to get a notification of the show, know who's coming on, join our Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord, and always post in there. When things are going, I haven't been using, because of work related stuff, I don't use Twitter or some of those things for the podcast stuff. I kind of keep it all inside our Discord group. So if you want to join that, super easy group to get into. It's not a lot of noise. There's a couple of the guys that are always bringing the deals in. So it would be a good one to join the averageguy.tv/Discord. Again, we're live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, theaverageguy.tv/live. Thanks to all the live folks that came out. Joe, Uncle Marv, Alex, John, Tony, and I think I saw Kevin or Ken out there a little bit earlier. With that, we'll say goodbye.
Where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.